everyone. Welcome back to Spotlight On, the interview podcast where I get to go and speak with Mississippi artists about their lives, their history, and their practice. We find out what they're doing in their studios, and we find out all about how they think. I'm your host, Derek Covington Smith, and I invite you to come along as we discover what it is to live and work as an artist in Mississippi today. The Spotlight On podcast is brought to you by the Little Yellow Building in Brookhaven, Mississippi. All right, on to the interview. Hey, everyone, and welcome back. Thank you for joining us. This week, we have Denise Hopkins with us. Denise, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So the start off question, why don't you tell us about growing up and tell us about your history with art?
Sure. I grew up in Mandeville, Louisiana. And I've been listening to the podcast, and I know a lot of the artists talk about how they, you know, they were doing art since the time they were really little. And that was not me at all. I took my first art class in college. And but prior to that, I have a great aunt. She actually passed away recently, who is a brilliant artist. She was also a nun. She was a Carmelite sister. And she had a studio in Lacombe, Louisiana, out in the woods. And it was beautiful. And one Christmas, right before I went to college, she gave me a handmade calligraphy coupon for art lessons in her studio. And so I took her up on it. I had just started to get a little bit interested in it, even though I'd never taken a class. And I went out there and she taught me everything I know to this day. So armed with my coupon art lessons, probably two or three, I went to college, and I went to Spring Hill in Mobile, Alabama. And it was as small as my high school, actually. And so it was liberal arts. So we had to do a fine arts credit to get a degree. And I said, well, I'll do art. I'll do visual art just to meet that requirement. I mean, I've had three lessons, so I might as well. And I ended up majoring in it. And it just went from there. So I majored in painting and English. And then after that, didn't really know what to do. And I had never heard of a regular person becoming an artist for a living. That wasn't an option that I knew existed. I thought you either made $10 million or no dollars, and there was nothing in between. So I went to graduate school to kind of figure things out, and I studied literature. And after that, I took a teaching job, teaching art and English at a high school in New Orleans. And I did art on and off. I probably sold one painting a year or something very small like that. And then after teaching for 6 years, I was newly married and I had a baby, and I decided not to go back to teaching. So I was going to take a year off. And in that time, my whole world fell apart. Everything went crazy. And I got divorced and I had a newborn and I had no job and I had no income and nothing was going right. So I went back to art for two reasons. One, for my sanity. It was my therapy. It was my healing. It was it got me out of what I call the dark ages. And also a career was born. So it was kind of twofold. And I said, you know, I can't go back to teaching. I have this small child and now I'm a single parent. And so it felt like a wash to go teach and put him in daycare. So I said, what can I do? And I started researching every art related field there was till kind of the light bulb went off and it said, you could just do art, you know, instead of like an art related something. So I started researching it. I listened to every podcast there was on how to make a living being an artist. I read every book. I everything you could do. And so I started one baby step at a time, and that was in 2014. So I can say that I've been a full-time artist since then. So it feels pretty good.
That's awesome. And the resources that you jumped into, the podcast and all that in 2014, I was in the same boat.
Oh yeah.
That exact same time. It's funny because I'm sure that if we talked podcasts, we probably listened to the same things and we're in the same Facebook groups.
I was amazed at how many resources were out there and how, I said that I thought you either made $10 million or $0. And just to discover that there were a lot of people making a good living, neither making zero nor 10 million, but all levels in between, and that it was possible. I never thought that that was a thing. One of the ones that I really got hooked on, they don't do a podcast anymore, but it's called The Abundant Artist. Yeah. And that one really, really helped me, like just basics, like start a mailing list, you know, like just really things I'd never heard of. And I was like, okay, step one, I can do that. Start a mailing list. And so that was a really good one. I'm glad to know that you've heard of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And these resources are still out there and available. Just because they're not currently airing, you can go and find them and go back to the beginning and get all that advice. And a lot of it is still, very, very useful. I mean, a lot of the basics are still very useful. Some of the tech information from back then is no longer really relevant, but the bone structure is really there. And it's kind of interesting now. Every once in a while, I go back and I'm like, oh, I remember they talked about this. So I'll go back and try to find it and I'm listening to it. And now there's years and years later, where I've followed these paths and I can still take that same lesson and restructure it into the way I'm building my business today.
Right. Like, really. Yeah. You never hit the, okay, I get it now. I'm done. I got it. You know, there's always ways to grow and learn and develop. And I think for me, just realizing that the same creative energy I would bring to my painting came from the same place that I could bring that to my business, because I grew up in a family. My brother's an engineer, my sister's in finance, my dad is in sales, my mom is a tech genius. You know, I don't have that brain that they have. But when I realized the thing that I did have, I could also apply to business. It was kind of, okay, then I can do this. You know, I don't have to be an engineer or these types of things. I can bring the same creative energy that I bring to painting to making a living off painting and marketing it.
Yeah. So what was your jumping off point?
And I know I just talked about growing up in Louisiana. I do live in Mississippi now, just for the record. I live in Pass Christian. And I've been here. I moved here during the pandemic, but my jumping off point when I was doing this research, thinking like, how am I going to start this, was discovering the painting a day movement and all these artists who would do one small painting a day and post it every day and write about it. Well, my background's in writing too, so it was a perfect way to join the two. And so I started doing that. I kind of launched my career with a painting a day for the month of April in 2014. I did one painting every day and I wrote about it. And the whole concept is that the paintings are small and manageable and that you can learn as much from doing a tiny painting as you can from a big one, but you get the sense of satisfaction at having completed it from start to finish in one sitting. And so that was how I started. And I told myself that if I didn't sell any for the whole month, that was fine because I had just started and that I wasn't going to give up, that was just going to be like step one. And there may be step two, three, four, five before I ever sell anything, but that this was part of becoming a professional, was staying the course. So that was my jumping off point. And I did a lot of small paintings, 6x6, 4x4, tiny little paintings, because I could do them while my newborn naps. And I could do it the whole thing in that amount of time. As he's grown, my paintings have gotten larger. And, you know, and as my business has grown, I still paint the small things, but they're really what got me started. So they're always, they will always be kind of special to me, like the little 6x6, one sitting painting. But that was really the jumping off place.
Now the people, if if they know you, they're going to know you from two different directions. Mm-hmm. They're either going to know you from one way or the other, because you have this wonderful business. I would say like the business structured side of your art. And then you have your creative artistic endeavors. But the business side of it, you have this wonderful wedding painting service. Yeah. Where you go and live paint these ceremonies, or you live paint these receptions, and you're a palette knife painter. Mm-hmm. Ah, difficult. How did all that come about?
So I had started my business. I was a full-time painter, committed to it. And about a year into doing that full-time, a former student, I taught high school girls, so it kind of lends itself to the wedding painting industry. One of my former students was getting married and she had booked a wedding painter. So live wedding paintings are very popular and very common in New Orleans, not so much other places. So I've done a few now in Mississippi, which I'm excited about, but I still go over there most of the time. But she had booked a wedding painter and it didn't go through for some reason. Like there was a cancellation, something happened. So she reached out to me as her former art teacher and said, I really wanted this. I tried to book this other person. It didn't work. Do you think that you could do it? And I said, no, that's not what I do. Are you kidding me? And then I thought about it a little bit more and I said, look, why don't you just try it with her wedding to see if it's something that you might like? And this is not a commitment to a lifetime of weddings. Little did I know. Just try it, see how it goes. So I did. And it went well. And I thought I could do a few more of these and it kind of snowballed from there. And painting with the knife for weddings is actually easier because it's very fast and the knife allows me to just layer on the paint quickly. And I'm using oil, so I don't have to worry so much about drying or colors blending that I don't want to. It's a very quick thing, which I think captures kind of the energy of the receptions, especially in New Orleans, which receptions are loud. They have brass bands a lot of times. And so I feel like the knife really works well with that. But I have been doing that so almost as long as I've been painting full time. But it has always been really important to me to be an artist who does live paintings and not a live painter. And that's it. You know, like she's a wedding painter. I've never wanted to be thought of like that, but to be thought of as a painter that, oh, wow, she also, or I like her style and I like what she does with the knife. That would be really cool for her to capture the scene at my wedding versus like, I need a wedding painter. Who could it be out of like a list of 10 people or whatever it is?
Well, that was my next question is, have you done any other type of events? I know several artists who out at there in California, one has this really graphic comic book style, which I love from childhood. Mm-hmm. But they go to concerts and mm-hmm. they set up these canvases and they capture either, sometimes they don't even paint what's around. They're just painting.
Right.
But like that's other venues. Have you reached out or has anyone reached out to you?
Is this occasionally I do some fundraising events where I go and paint live and it's not, I try to steer people away because they'll see me at a wedding and they'll say, oh, that's great. Let's do a live painting to raise money for this cancer hospital and we'll paint the gala. And I'm like, no, I don't think anybody wants that. You know, like, why would you want to bid on a painting of a fundraiser? So I'll try to steer them towards something, a meaningful image that I can paint. People can still see it unfold from start to finish, but has nothing to do with, you know, tables of people or the random venue where it is. I mean, so I've done that sometimes, mostly for fundraisers. I do Mardi Gras balls, any kind of party type atmosphere, but not a lot of New Orleans painters do the concerts and things like that. But those are a little bit harder book. That's more like, I really want to go do this and then maybe someone will buy it. And so I kind of prioritize, especially to pack up my minivan and put all the stuff in there and go out and set up and do all of that. I really prioritize for those types of things, like the paid gigs for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be the only way you'd really be able to do it with any confidence is going in knowing that the promoter came in and they hired you to come and do this at the event. Right. I was part of an exhibition in LA, and there was going to be no way that the size of the paintings and what they wanted. I mean, it was going to be $800 just to ship them over there in time. Right. And, there was just going to be no way. And so the way it was handled is that everything they wanted this event to happen, they wanted it the way that they wanted, and they wanted us. So they just prepaid us for everything.
Yeah.
Now they own the artwork and they own all of it. And it was a wonderful experience, but I would imagine that'd be the same need is to have to reach out and say, okay, we want this person just rocking our event. Art is a focal statement. There's been, you know, I won't say a movement, but just a resurgence in events before COVID where they were bringing in big, interesting things to happen like that, mm-hmm. that unfold over the course of an event. So it is, we're here for hire, by goodness. If you have an event and you want artists, like,
right,
reach out, they'll cause a spectacle. They'll get people to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many people who do the live paintings. What's been really interesting is and how different everybody approaches it. And so if someone approaches me and says, you know, and kind of asks me to do something that isn't my wheelhouse or also doesn't bring me any joy at all, like, I don't do my paintings are very impressionistic. I don't do a lot of facial features. I'm trying to capture the spirit of the event and the energy. And so if someone's like, oh, can you do faces and can you make sure the cake is in there? And can you do, I'll say no, but I know somebody who can, you know, and refer another artist, which I love because we're not all the same. And we have different styles and I don't get that a lot, but if I do, I know I can always refer them to somebody else.
Now I want to talk about your art, the ones you create from passion and the ones you love, and that's what you're creating at home. You have the most beautiful series of palette knife bird paintings.
Well, thank you.
Your backgrounds are broken down into big swatches of color, and then just the way you go in and capture the bird's figure and form with a palette knife blows my mind. You're a phenomenally skilled palette knife painter at figurative arts. You know, normally you think of palette knife as big abstract, but you've got this. I mean, I love to look at each one of them. Just stare at it and follow the waves of the paint and watch it build the figure. Where does all that start? Where does that come about?
Yeah. Sometimes I get a little self-conscious that I paint so many birds. So I appreciate you saying that. There was this skit on one of these comedy shows where they were saying, put a bird on it, like to everything in the store. Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Yes. So I get self-conscious because that's what I do. I put a bird on everything, but it started when, when I was going through what I told you was my dark ages. I was living in New Orleans and I lived on a bayou, and I would just watch pelicans dive for food. And they do this amazing thing where they go really high and then they nosedive at really fast straight into the water. And I thought it was beautiful. And it also, for whatever reason, them doing that made me feel a little bit more hopeful just watching them. They were making a splash. They were making their mark on the water. They were also, sometimes they'd come up empty and sometimes I'd see that they had a fish in their beak. And I just thought, you know, I don't have to be passive. I feel like a lot of my life, I have waited for things to happen to me. And art, and then which was born out of bird watching, essentially, was an impetus to be active, like to go after what I wanted. And I could, as I was making paintings, I could also kind of shape my life, what I wanted it to look like. And so the birds were the inspiration for that. And so it was only pelicans. I was so interested in watching them, especially this crazy dive that they do. But after that, I was like, well, you can only explore that subject for so long. So I was like, well, let's do some other birds that you see. And then from there, it kind of turned into any bird that I saw, I was really interested in. I think, and also it goes back to the Emily Dickinson poem, which has always been really important to me. And a lot of my paintings start from being inspired by poetry, but her "Hope is the Thing with Feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all." That's what they were for me, that little, and that's what I want people to see in them. I don't want them to see like, you know, the put a bird on it, this like Hobby Lobby art or whatever it is, but that there's like kind of a spiritual component to them and for me. And I hope that that's what other people see too.
You have a way of breaking down the backgrounds into these, it's hard to describe because it's not necessarily bold. They're very inviting. Some are pasteled colors, but not necessarily. But they're these beautiful swatches of palettes of color, just a couple of them that hide behind these birds and edge out the lines. Do you have specific color palettes that have developed in your life that you love to go back to?
Yeah, definitely. I still use a limited palette that my one and only painting professor recommended on my first day of painting, which is basically like a warm red and a cool red, the primaries in warm and cool, warm blue, cool blue, warm yellow, cool yellow, white, and like a burnt sienna. And that's where I go from. But I mean, that palette hasn't changed over the years, but like what I use more of has. And I love starting with like hot pink underneath and letting it kind of peekaboo through the shapes that are forming, and just any like really, really bright, bold, but usually warm, usually pink or red back there. And I'm not quite sure why, except like there's an energy to it and I want it to be the backdrop against which all the other colors show. So hot pink, it's funny because when I was younger, I was like not a very pink person. I wasn't really into it. And now I just can't get enough. I can't live without it, especially like the brighter and bolder it is, the more I like it.
You had, you know, we talked about how you got your start in art. We went and you researched the business side of it and how you actually make this stuff happen. What's your day-to-day art life like now that you've grown a business out of it?
Yeah, it's been wild recently. I am opening a gallery in Pass Christian. And actually, so the grand opening is for November 5th. But I'm trying to be open just for a soft opening tomorrow. So that's fun. It's been, so the last month or two have been just wild trying to get, I've been painting walls more than I have canvases. It's been really wild, but my typical, this is a really big change for me to have a brick and mortar place. It's exciting, it's scary, it's all of those things. But my day to day is usually divided between the creative side and the business side of art. So I usually start my day by going for a run or a walk to clear my head and just kind of get ready because it's coming. And I usually, when I get back, I like to spend some time in my studio. I have one. My husband and I built a house here in Pas Christian about a year ago, and we designed it. It's raised because of, you know, the hurricanes. And underneath the house is a studio that we built. And so I go in there and I'll work on whatever it is that I'm working on, whatever series I'm doing. Sometimes I'll start with one of those little 6x6 paintings as kind of a warm up, and then move on to something larger that I'm going to leave unfinished. That way I can pick it up when I go back and have a starting point. And then after that, I'll usually do that until around lunchtime. And then after that, I kind of get on my computer and I work on my blog or work on photographing things or social media or email, answering emails or whatever it may be. When I reverse that order, it's not as good. When I start my day on my computer, which is so hard not to, because if something's in my inbox, I want to answer it right away, or if there's some task. But on my best days, I put that last and I put the painting first. And that tends to work the best.
Tell us, because it's a huge jump from being a working artist, working at home and creating your own work that you're putting out into the world yourself, to going into opening a brick and mortar gallery. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the steps that you've gone through to have to do this, to change mindset? And
yeah. Oh, it's been wild. I have wanted to display my art in a pleasing way for a while. When you work at home, I mean, the paintings tend to collect in corners and, be upside down or leaning against this, leaning against that. And I have been looking for a while for the right space. And so when I say a while, years, but not ready to do it unless it was the right space. Because it is a really big change. The whole model of my business, the one that I researched and learned about when I first started, was all about online. And it just felt like I was ready to not change that model, but to add to it. So when people say the connections I've met online say, where can I see your work in person? My answer was kind of, you can't. Unless you want to come to my house, which is kind of odd. And I'll do like maybe two shows a year somewhere with some group of artists. But the answer was really, you can't. And so I just wanted to bring that component to the online business that I had already established. Knowing I wasn't starting from nothing, that I already have a little bit of a following. I already have this online presence. So now you can have a place where the paintings aren't just thrown in the corner, or like this one's leaning against this easel, and they're on pretty white walls, and there's beautiful lighting. And it just felt like time. So when the little downtown area where I live, a spot opened up, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to go look at it. It's too much work. I'm not going to be able to do this. But with a little encouragement from my husband, he's like, why don't we just go look? So we looked, and the owner of the space got really, really excited about the thought of it being an art gallery. The other options were laundromat. So I can see why he was a little excited. But he thought that it would be a great fit for the community. And he was really excited, and he was willing to work with me on some of the build out that needed to happen, because this space was a daiquiri shop prior to me moving in. So there was a good bit of build out to do, and he was willing to take on a lot of it just for the sake of bringing art to the community and having that here. So his reaction, and when I saw the space and saw the potential that it had, I thought, well, this is it. You know, I've looked at spaces before and turned them down, and this felt, it just felt right. And since I've started moving in, I can't tell you how many people have said, wow, I've never been in an art gallery before. I can't wait to come in. And I thought, okay, that feels really good that I'm going to introduce you to this concept. It's neat. It's been a ton of work. But hopefully it will all pay off in the end.
Is it a self-named gallery? Is it going to be Denise Hopkins Gallery?
Denise Hopkins Fine Art. Yep.
Denise Hopkins Fine Art. So that's perfect lead in because DeniseHopkinsFineArt.com is your website. Yep. Denise Hopkins Fine Art is your Instagram. So that's branding, people, branding. Put it all together.
Yeah.
You know, and claim your name fast. If you you have an interesting, unique name, you know, research, find out if you're like for me, I had to add Covington back into my name because with Derek Smith, there's lawyers and football players and authors and they've been doing things for a lot longer than I have. So, but if you look at Derek Covington Smith, there's not a lot of that out there. You know, I'm that Google space. So get that, find out if your name's one, like get that branding taken care of early and write it out. Wow, I'm so excited for you. That's so exciting.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It is definitely exciting. It's lots of other things too, but, you know, it's definitely exciting.
Well, I was going to ask you about your, any current projects, but that's it. That's what all your time has been going into.
Yeah. And it's way more than I thought. I just thought I knew it would be a lot of work. I just had no idea it would be this much work.
Well, I have another question and I will let you get back, you know, to your day and stop taking up your time. But for those coming up behind you, for any artists that are coming up and looking to figure it out like we did, what would be some advice that you would give to them?
So I think that the main thing for me that I wish someone had told me sooner was the most important thing is showing up, is showing up to your art the way you would your job. If you want it to be your job, you have to show up to it. The difference between me now and me, you know, when I was making three paintings a year is just consistency. Just to show up, to be there, to do it. And it's not about, there's that quote, I don't know if it's Picasso, but he says, inspiration does exist, but it has to find you working. And I show up to my art, whether or not I feel like it, whether or not I feel inspired, if it's a good day or it's a bad day, because it's the act of doing it that creates the inspiration. And if I waited to be inspired, I would go back to creating three paintings a year and wondering why I can't make it as an artist. So I would say that would be my biggest piece. And then the other thing would be, not to compare yourself to other people, but to compare your new work to your old work. I think that when I find myself in that place where I'm comparing other artists' success or how good their paintings are or why they're so much farther along, that is not productive for me. It leads me nowhere good. But when I look at old work compared to new work, I can see how far I've come, or I can also see, oh, wow, look at what you had going on in that old work. Maybe it's time to bring some of that back. Or like you can really see your emotion in that. And you've kind of drifted away from that. And now you're getting kind of clinical about it. And so I find that that's a much more helpful exercise than comparing yourself to others, both in the art itself and in your career and those types of things. And I guess the last thing I wish someone had told me is like, leave things unfinished. I think the most important thing to that consistency is this sense of inertia. Like once you're going, it's hard to stop. But if every day you have to pull everything back out and say, what am I going to paint? That takes up all your creative energy that you could be just like picking up where you left off yesterday. So I always like to leave something unfinished on the easel so that when I come back to it the next day, there is no well, what am I going to do today? That part's already decided for me and I don't have to waste any time wondering about that.
I have to sleep on it. You know, I leave it on the easel and I walk away from it. And every day after I've slept on it, I come back in fresh eyes, fresh thoughts. And eventually I'll just decide, oh, it's finished.
Yeah, absolutely.
Putting on that final stroke and being like, this was the,
right.
I walk in the morning. I'm like, no, my name goes on next.
Right. And like, there is a point where you say, you know, nothing is ever really finished, but you just have to call it. Like, I'm just going to call it because this has the potential to go in the opposite direction real soon. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of painting and art are very humbling experiences because you can't master it. You can't ever be finished. But it's also what makes it exciting is that there's always something around the corner for you.
Denise, thank you so much for being on and talking with us and telling us about your life and your art practice and your business practice and all of this information. It's so extremely useful for everyone to hear, to know that there's work out in the world that's not that $10 million sale. You know, there's levels to being an artist and you can climb the levels and you can make, you know, it takes time, but you can make the money you want to make. You just have to learn how to do it and adjust your business.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me. And I love listening to all the artists that you bring on. I've been so inspired by them. So thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. For everyone else, thank you for listening and thank you for joining us. We will be back again next week with another interview. Bye.